are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, February 14th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Rob Portergate. Not going away for the White House. And as such, is Donald Trump going to quash any and every possible immigration deal? And speaking of which, today we'll have another episode of Why People Who Work for ICE Are Garbage and Should Be Shunned. Meanwhile, Dems pick up their 36th flipped state legislative race since 2016, this time in Florida. And Virginia shows why elections still matter. Turning Point's top diapered activist quits what he calls a shitte organization. Pennsylvania governor rejects the Republicans' redistricting plan. Pennsylvania State Court now to hand it over to their expert to redraw those seats. And New York Times having a rough day yesterday. Meanwhile, dozens of refugee resettlement offices across the country will be closing. And FEMA booting Puerto Ricans from hotel shelters, because why not? And lastly, the cops in Israel want to charge Bibi Netanyahu. Maybe the first time ever I say Blue Lives Matter with any sincerity. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. How awesome would it be? Oh, happy Valentine's Day, everybody. How awesome would it be to have Bibi Netanyahu rolled up? That would.
This would be great.
Everybody in the office.
We're all thinking about it now.
That's just a really, really, really lush thought. I want the wife definitely locked up as well. Mrs. Bibi. Mrs. and the Bibi. Son. They all need the whole family. That family.
The important thing is Bibi goes.
The so-called progressives are actually regressive.
There you go.
The whole thing, exactly. No, the best scenario would be is if they try to flip on each other.
Nah, that would be good.
That's all I want for Valentine's Day.
I would have had a much better policy if she was not always trying to overdraw from the accounts.
Folks, just for the sake of your calendars, you may want to mark this down. On Thursday of this week, that's tomorrow, Mitt Romney will launch his Utah Senate campaign via social media. So you may want to check that.
Hello.
Who let the dogs out?
Keeping it cool.
Hey, everybody. Look, it's Gangnam Style.
I think
I've made a GIF for my Instagram.
I think, by golly, when we cause old ladies to starve, children to lose food, and the entire destruction of the American underclass, you ought to do it without saying overtly racist things, by golly.
I
will go on Morning Joe for 40 minutes to talk about that.
Look forward to voting for every single one of Donald Trump's initiatives. However, maintaining the moral high ground and leading the impeachment hearings for the Republicans.
Exactly. You thought Jeff Flake was a sanctimonious, annoying, smug prick? Well, hold my milk.
Let me show you what a real aristocrat is like.
Folks, I have recently purchased a whole new set of Brooklinen sheets, and they're fantastic.
I got to get some of those.
Honestly, well, all right. They have two different types. And I get the classic crisp, clean, cool sheets. Like the just like they're cotton. So they come out. You got to wash them like once or twice. They actually give you a detergent. Maybe that's why. I don't know. Because I've never gotten the other ones that are sort of like silkier, I guess. I don't like those. I love the all cotton sheets. I also, like, when I lie on them, I think, like, these are going to last for a long time. And so I can't tell if I love them because of the feel, which I do love, or if
or
it's
the
like
savings.
The savings. And I project out. Because I had a pair of sheets for like, I had a pair of sheets that I had in college that lasted until like I was 30. I had a pair of like 12-year-old sheets. And then, you know, at one point they just rip because you've worn them out. Anyways, regardless, Brooklyn. I love Brooklyn and I love the sheets.
Hey.
You spend a third of your life in bed. You should make it count. With Brooklinen.com, you get high-quality sheets and bedding you deserve without the luxury retail prices or the overwhelming big-box store shopping experience. They also have, it's not just sheets, they also have like a duvet cover and a comforter. And this is what, I mean, I've talked about this before, but Brooklinen's all-season down comforter rated number one best comforter by the Wirecutter blog. That's huge. That's basically where I, whatever the wire cutter says for me to buy, that's what I buy. Brooklinen cuts out the unnecessary markups, the retail licensing fees, the manufacturing waste in order to offer high-end designs and exceptional savings across the collection. This is luxury bedding underpriced. You have to try these sheets today. Like I say, I love my Brooklinen sheets. I now have two and a half sets. Full sets, including the comforter. Try these sheets, and I know you'll love them too. I mean, I don't need three comforters.
No.
I need one. I have one
That's
comforter.
Quite a bit.
I think we have two duvets, and then three sets of, what do you call it? Like the rubber band kind, and the fitted sheet, and the flat sheet. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer for just my listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code MAJORITY at brooklinen.com. In fact, Brooklinen is so confident you're going to love your new sheets, they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. I guess it could be 60-day. People who work the night shift, you're trying them out during the day?
Yeah.
There's no reason not to give these sheets a try. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping, use the promo code MAJORITY at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen, brooklinen.com, promo code MAJORITY. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. All right, a couple of things we want to talk about today. And maybe I'll just touch on this because I think I'm hoping that we're going to have someone to come and tell us the deeper story to this in Virginia. But the utility monopoly Dominion Energy, I think it's called. Is it Energy? Yeah, whatever. They wanted to basically double dip on a rate increase. And the fact that Democrats controlled 49 seats after the last state house elections basically quashed them. We're hopefully going to have somebody on tomorrow to talk about this, but in a broader way. But, you know, these elections make a difference. And in Florida, I mean, obviously, there's two things that you take from the Virginia victories. One is that it makes a material difference for people in Virginia in terms of the lives of people in Virginia. And they're one or two seats away in Virginia from a whole host of reforms that may take place there, including, of course, redistricting. Which is huge, and that ties in with the Pennsylvania story that is out today and, you know, has been ongoing. But also in Florida, gives you sort of the other, I guess, data point about these elections. Today's Wednesday. Yesterday in Florida, we saw the 36th red to blue switch in a state legislative race since 2016. The Democrat, Margaret Good, won by 7 points in the 72nd district. This is a district that went for Mitt Romney, went for Donald Trump. Donald Trump, they went for by 5 points, I think. So this is a 12-point swing. Now, look, you don't know. You don't know, and we're far from the November elections. But based upon these other races that we've seen, and if a 12-point swing can happen at the midterms, that's going to... There is this critical mass that we have when you talked about gerrymandered districts. And the way that they do this is they pack all the Democrats into one district, and then they make a bunch of like 55 to 45 Republican to Democrat districts. 55 to 45, it's an arbitrary number I'm making, but that's around that a point, 9 to 10 points. So if you see a flip of 12 points, there's a lot of those seats that fall. There was races last night in Georgia and Oklahoma. Republicans won those pretty easily. But this Democrat, and, you know, again, you're looking from afar, so it's sort of hard to tell. But this is a, like I say, this is a Republican district. And she claims a couple of things. Well, first off, she says the Rob Porter case helped move some votes towards her. It was another indication of the sort of the incompetence and the misogyny that the White House is bathed in.
It's who they are.
She also based her campaign on opposition to school vouchers, on support for Medicaid expansion, and on environmental protection. This is, like I say, in a Republican district. So I don't know if those positions helped her, but they certainly didn't hurt her. Despite making up 19% of registered voters, Democratic women made up 26% of early voters. Democratic women turned out at 30% in the early vote. So this wasn't necessarily like a situation where you had in Alabama or Virginia where younger people and people of color came out. This is, you know, this is the Gulf Coast in Florida. A lot of retiree types.
I got to say, Michael from Florida called in yesterday and had a really, you know, his usual, like, really smart take on how Bill Nelson would hold his seat. But that was built on a scenario where you wouldn't even worry about those types of voters. So if that, if they show up along with like a good turnout operation, I mean, there could be some pretty good results in Florida.
We will see. Yeah. We will see. All right. Well, let's get to some of what's going on with Portergate. I mean, I mean, there's going to be big implications to this, and it's going to be surprising to see if John Kelly can hold on through this. Yesterday, well, here, let's first watch Donald Trump respond to these questions about Rob Porter. This is the alleged wife beater. Now, to be fair, Porter apparently met with reporters privately as the story was come out and claims that his wife was hit by a Venetian vase. They were arguing about the vase in Venice, and the vase hit his wife at the time in her face.
Not abuse.
Not Marx, abuse.
Marx
and
Brothers.
Then apparently, and I don't know if this was addressed, because she said she took the picture because he had been repeatedly abusing her, physically abusing her. And he and she took the picture basically as saying, like, okay, I have evidence now. Evidence that you've punched me in the face. And if you do this again, I have this evidence. Now, maybe in his story, it's like, we were in Venice. We thought it was so funny that the Venetian vase hit her in the face that we took this picture.
Or like vases just kept falling on her. And she was like, I'm going to monitor this for the hotel and their vase placements.
So, so take dangerous. A picture of take, a picture, take a picture of the black eye I have. Anyways, Donald Trump, there's a lot of indication that Donald Trump knew this was going on. And a lot of this has to do with, at the end of the day, with security clearances. Here is Donald Trump responding to the questions after a couple of, I guess, press availabilities.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mr. President,
thank you.
Give a message to domestic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's his message to domestic violence.
I actually think
thank you very much.
That is literally the most succinct message that this administration's ever
thank
put
out.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you very much.
Gotta jump. Gotta jump. Appreciate the call. So there it is, Donald Trump refusing to answer any questions. The problem for the White House is not so much that Donald Trump refuses to answer any questions. The problem is that the FBI director is not refusing to answer questions. And this came up at the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday, I guess. Was this on the 13th yes, I believe yesterday. In the morning, the White House has claimed that they weren't aware of these incidents because the security clearance process was ongoing for Rob Porter, so they didn't know about any of this stuff. And Christopher Wray, who is one of those guys who's been probably having sort of a miserable time the past 6 months, I imagine, was quite enthusiastic about being able to tell the otherwise very banal truth yesterday in front of the Senate. Here is Ron Wyden questioning Christopher Wray.
Vice Chairman Warner highlighted in his opening statement the importance of an effective security clearance process. So I've got a question for you, Director Wray. Was the FBI aware of allegations related to Rob Porter and domestic abuse? And if so, was the White House informed this could affect his security clearance? When were they informed? And who at the White House was informed?
Well, Senator, there's a limit to what I can say about the content of any particular background investigation for a variety of reasons that I'm sure you can appreciate. I would say that the background investigation process involves a fairly elaborate set of standards, guidelines, protocols, agreements, et cetera, that have been in place for 20 plus years. And I'm quite confident that in this particular instance, the FBI followed established protocols.
So was the White House informed that this could affect his security clearance? That's a yes or no.
I can't get into the content of what was briefed.
But what were they informed?
What I can tell
pause
you.
Pause it. Okay, so just understand, just so that, I mean, I don't think this is too difficult, but I just want to make it clear. Wyden's asking him, were they aware of the, was the White House aware of these allegations? Now, Wray can't say, can't acknowledge these allegations because that would be revealing what's in the content of the security background check. The idea that the FBI was not aware of this is completely implausible. Of course they were. So it was clearly, that information was clearly in the background security clearance dossier, if you will, or folder. And it would clearly, maybe there's other stuff that's even worse about Rob Porter that stop them from being able to issue a security clearance. But we don't know. Let's just give Rob Porter the benefit of the doubt and say that his security clearance was withheld because he was a repeated alleged wife beater. So Wyden wants to know, what did the White House know about the security clearance? Because the White House has said that the situation, the process is still ongoing.
Informed.
What I can tell you is that the FBI submitted a partial report on the investigation in question in March, and then a completed background investigation in late July. That is, soon thereafter, we received requests for follow-up inquiry, and we did the follow-up and provided that information in November, and then we administratively closed the file in January. And then earlier this month, we received some additional information, and we passed that on as well.
So, in other words, there has not been an ongoing procedure at all. In fact, they just administratively closed it in January, which means operationally they were done in November. And they submitted their preliminary report in March, which basically said, like, you've got a problem. And then in July, they're like, oh, you've got a definitive problem. Oh, you want a second opinion? You have a real big problem in November. I guess they don't care. Well, give them another 45 days and we'll shut the whole thing down and that's their problem.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. So
that seems obvious.
And the apparently what also happened in November is that the White House stopped issuing temporary security clearances. So basically what happened was they
covered and then stopped.
No, they just said we can't afford to offer any more temporary security clearances. So they gave him a temporary security clearance. This is the White House. But it would be the functionally equivalent of going like, okay, we all need security clearances in this office. Michael's not eligible. Okay, we can get by because we just need the four of us to have security clearances and you're just a little bit out of the loop. Okay, Brendan does not satisfy. So it's just going to be the three of us. And then it gets down to like, oh, Jamie's got a problem. So it's just Matt and I. That's all we really need to operate. Matt, Matt's not eligible either.
And then I go back and I'm like, is my temporary still good? I've been getting all of the information.
We're going to have to issue no more of these temporary ones. We need somebody in the office who actually has a real security clearance. That's basically what happened there. And
in a certain sense,
the only thing that seems a little bit different about this than other things. Again, you know, with the media, with the, I guess, the center-right never-Trumpers, if it's about process, then everybody has a license to be critical. This is like where Mitt Romney, when he gets into office, this is where he's going to have a field day. This is why, like, Jeff Flake is probably, like, running around.
Yeah,
right,
all
now.
Process.
Yes, it's all process. With that said, it's still interesting that you see a guy like Trey Gowdy going on CNN and saying stuff like this.
Will the Oversight Committee be launching an investigation into this?
We did last night.
So it's official.
That word probably means more to you than it does to me. What matters to me is that we are directing inquiries to people that we think have access to information we don't have. You can call it official. You can call it unofficial. Those words don't mean anything to me. What means something to me is I'm going to direct questions to the FBI that I expect them to answer. And if they don't answer them, then they're going to need to give me a really good reason. And you'll learn that reason. And you can judge whether or not it's a sufficient reason or not. But unless you're Jack Bauer, you can't make people answer questions. I've been trying for 7 years to get certain people to answer questions without a whole lot of success. We're going to try, and then we could use your help if they say no.
Well, for sure, you can count on us for that. But the reason that
Thank
I'm
you.
Pressing...
Pause it.
That was an interesting reference.
You know, Jack Bauer is incidentally a fictional character who was a torturer. And
That's a real window into Trey Gowdy's relationship and desires, particularly pertaining to Hillary Clinton, I think, if we're being honest here.
Indeed.
The reason that I'm pressing in terms of whether it's official is because, as you know, the ranking Democrat on your committee, Elijah Cummings, has been, he says, pressing you to look into this, Rob Porter's employment, and the reason that he was handling classified documents without full security clearance. He says he's been pressing you for months to do this and that you've been resisting looking into this. Is that true?
No, ma'am.
Here is what the letter he sent to you says. This is from Elijah Cummings. It appears that the Oversight Committee has constructed a wall around the White House in order to prevent any credible oversight whatsoever. Rob Porter served as White House Staff Secretary, a critical gatekeeper in terms of vetting and managing all documents reaching the president's desk. If our committee does not investigate these allegations, it is unclear who will. So
there you have it. Well, so either Trey Gowdy is seeing that there is a sense within Capitol Hill that this thing's for real, that there's other issues involved here, or he just wants to try a new hairdo on television. Both seem very possible.
This is a rare forehead cowlick.
Yeah, but it's a new one, right? Now he's like swooping it back. I don't know. I'm not going to get too caught up in that.
Sea bass looking bastard. Couldn't even get my wife.
Let's do
Looks
our...
like a goddamn halibut.
We will get to that in just a second. Let's do our what seemingly daily look at to just how despicable ICE is. We should just say that what's going on now in the Senate, and I think that's starting this morning, is there is a I'm using air quotes here. I'm not physically doing them, but I'm just putting you on notice that these are air quotes. There's an immigration debate going on in the Senate at the moment. And for the most part, Mitch McConnell appears to be gearing this up to be just a way to weaken Democratic Senate candidates in those red states. Guys like Joe Manchin, Heidi Heitkamp, Donnelly, a couple others, trying to get them on record to take votes that McConnell perceives as hard votes for them to take in those states, which probably, based upon their support for Donald Trump, tend to be more anti-immigrant than the median in the country, particularly with a Democratic senator. It is quite clear that Donald Trump intends to veto any bill, even if it was to be able to come something out of the Senate and the House. He will veto those bills unless they have really the rollbacks in legal immigration that he wants. And by all accounts, that seems to be the White House strategy for 2018. We're going to go more anti-immigrant, more, what did Donald Trump call it? Culturally relevant or something. In other words, we're going to hear a lot more about black guys not doing what he thinks they should be doing in whatever context. Probably sports, probably entertainment. That's the strategy to drive the vote in 2018. In the meantime, a second federal court has enjoined the Trump administration from allowing the March deadline to go forward with those people who had yet to re-register or couldn't re-register under DACA. So for the moment, and still, of course, this is sort of a torturous existence, right? Where you have to wait every day to find out if you're going to get deported to a country that you really have no connection with whatsoever. So that's what the state of play is. I don't know if there's going to be any type of DACA fix at this point. Donald Trump does not think it behooves him. So that's bad news. Let's go over some of the most recent ICE travesties. This came out of Seattle, I guess, or I should say Washington State, Tukwila. I guess that's a place in Washington State. So a man who's been in this country for 14 years came here from Honduras. He was looking to escape rampant gang violence there. His name is Rodriguez Macareno. His brother had been shot dead by gang members. His friend had been cut into pieces. So he decided to leave. He worked as a carpenter, became a leader in his church, started a family. He has three children, a set of twins who are three and a one-year-old. They're citizens registered, U.S. citizens. He has no criminal record. And apparently, last week, he saw someone trying to break into his car. And apparently a couple months before, somebody had tried to break into his home. So he called the police. Officers found a man who they determined to be trespassing, but they didn't have probable cause to arrest him, so they let him go. The officers, however, held on to Rodriguez Macareno. They ran him through the National Crime Information Center database. This is basically like a clearinghouse where all sorts of information, including warrants, are posted. This is, I guess, a standard procedure. But most police departments do not pay attention to what ICE has put in there. That is essentially what a sanctuary city is, for all intents and purposes. The Tukwila police usually don't act on ICE information. But apparently they saw some type of warrant from ICE. Now, here's the thing. You really can't have, I mean, I guess technically you could. Maybe definitionally, but when ICE puts this up, it's not a warrant because it's not been issued by a judge whatsoever. Not a magistrate, not a judge, not a bench, nowhere. They just say, we want this guy. Law enforcement officers, local ones, do not have the authority to arrest people on behalf of ICE. There's no court issue warrant. ICE can't say, just pick him up for us. That's kidnapping. And apparently that's been upheld many times in the courts. But this administrative document that was placed in there by ICE caused them to bring this guy to ICE for deportation. I guess they're still fighting it. We'll see. But the idea that you could call the police and get deported is so dangerous for people who are living in communities with undocumented immigrants. Because all of these people are going to refuse to call the police. Oh, there's a fire over there? I'd love to call the fire department, but I don't want to get deported. I see a mugging. I'd love to call the police about it, but I don't want to have to give my name or my location because I don't want to get deported. I don't want to leave my three kids who are under the age of four. So I'm just not going to participate. I'm just not going to do all the things that we hope our fellow members of society will do. Even Rudy Giuliani, when he was mayor of this city, even Rudy Giuliani understood that.
That is a very big even.
It's a huge even. Yeah, I mean, even.
People really need to get.
When Rudy Giuliani
is a prototype for these people.
When Rudy Giuliani is the voice of reason and saying you don't roll up these people without any cause, you know there's a problem. When I can sit here and quote Rudy Giuliani in a positive way on any issue that I would look at, you know that we have sort of crossed the Rubicon here. Today we have multiple stories about ICE, how despicable they are. This is in Phoenix. A guy named Jesus Barones. His mother brought him to the United States from Mexico when he was 17 months old. He grew up in Arizona, went to school in Phoenix from kindergarten through 12th grade. He started a family. He has five kids. For the past 2 years, Barones, who is now 30, had been working with an immigration attorney to try and resolve his legal status. Immigration officials had allowed Barones to stay in the country and apply for work permits, provided he check in with local immigration and custom enforcement offices regularly. So apparently this guy, over the years, I think as early as 2010, was deported. But he came back to the country because he had kids here who were relying on him. And then he got deported again. And he came back because he had kids here and he wanted to take care of them. They were fully dependent upon him, the kids. And apparently when he walked back in, he just showed them an ID from his high school, which he had attended. He said, I'm going back to Phoenix. You're raised here since 17 months old. You're an American. So in this instance, Barones was faced with an even more intense dilemma because his five-year-old son has leukemia. And they were ready to deport him. And so he heard that Shadow Rock United Church of Christ was acting as a sanctuary for other undocumented immigrants facing deportation. Barones, as a last resort, basically moved in to the church because his son, Jaden, gets intensive chemotherapy once a month at the Phoenix Children's Hospital. But Barones had to give chemotherapy pills to Jaden because his wife is pregnant. And obviously she can't be handling chemotherapy pills. So he goes into the church and basically, I guess, since somebody at ICE realized at the very least, this is going to be a press story now. And between the church and the leukemia, we just got to be a little bit careful. So they have given him a 1 year stay of deportation. So you get a chance to see if your kid makes it or not, and then you leave. This is what we're living in now. This is the horror of someone who came to this country at age 17 months old is going through. I don't know why that necessarily would make a difference, but that's just absurd. It's just absurd. And then here's the last of it. The chief counsel for ICE in Seattle. That doesn't mean like the most popular lawyer for ICE in Seattle. It means the guy who runs the whole office, the guy who organizes which lawyers are going to do what. And for a region. Apparently, he has now been charged for stealing the identities of seven people in various stages of the immigration proceedings. Yes, in an attempt to defraud credit card companies.
These are the most despicable people on the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't. I was talking to a guy recently, and he was going off about his various things that he's done in his sort of like petty criminal career. And he goes to me, he goes, but I never did credit cards, man, because when you buy those numbers on the dark web, you don't know who it is. He goes, could be a multimillionaire. That's cool. But it also could be some guy who's just living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
And I couldn't live it myself. And this guy is literally deporting these people and taking their credit card number.
Yeah.
That is the lowest scumbag on the planet.
Yeah. This is the second time in 2 years, apparently, that an ICE attorney in that very office has been charged with a federal crime.
Maybe death penalty is negotiable.
In terms of the
apples.
Immigrants they're trying to seek to deport.
Got those bad apples in there.
They're not sending their best from law schools.
And apparently, Department of Homeland Security has been pressuring Congress to reduce polygraph requirements for some of their employees. I wonder why that would be.
I would imagine so. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of things you can do. You can sexually terrorize women. You could steal credit card numbers. You could do deals with drug cartels. There's a lot of stuff that if government bureaucracy could just get out of the way.
I feel like we just need some like some stock music and some images of the ICE seal. And it would be a recruitment tool for ICE.
They're just following orders.
Actually, you know what? We should probably put together a video like that. That would actually be worthwhile. All right, let's before we go, a couple of people sent this, and you know, we talked about this the other day, in the context of Joe Rogan, that, Joe Rogan had mentioned, us on the show because I think because of a video that we had done about, him and Doug Stanhope and this and that, and people were emailing me, they were upset. They were like, Joe Rogan is inviting Kyle Kulinski and Jimmy Dore on the show. And he should invite you. And I was like, look, I'm happy for anybody from the left to get on that show to promote left issues. The problem is that, and do we have those screenshots? We should have two. We need that other one, Brendan. He doesn't have it.
Which one?
The one from the Reddit.
That's in the sample.
Okay. So I don't see it here. But the part of the problem is, and make sure you get it, Matt. One of the problems with this is that, like I've been saying, look, I don't care about Jimmy as a person. I don't care about, you know, I mean, it would be nice if he was actually did any work. But the problem is that I've suggested is that when you have somebody going around doing stuff like Hillary Clinton has Parkinson's or, you know, the Seth Rich murder, is it tied to the DNC? Asking those type of questions, right? Okay. That stuff poisons the well. It poisons the well and the water supply and the product that I'm selling, which may very well be the exact same political program, more or less, than Jimmy's. For Jimmy, he's willing to trade things like what's happening with ICE to these people for a vague notion of the words Green New Deal, which had, of course, no chance of coming about. But as long as, but that self-satisfaction and whatnot, that's all well and good. But here's where the real problem lies. Here is Jimmy Dore on The Joe Rogan Show.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
That's why I get...
Excuse me. The Joe Rogan Experience.
Barack Obama's entire cabinet came from an email from Citigroup, okay? So people trying to say that somehow corruption started on January 20th, 2017, are fooling themselves. And that's what I'm fighting against on my
show.
You
are, and you're one of the only people that are doing that. You're one of the only people that are online that you're not obligated to shill for the left. You're not doing it. But everybody else seems to be. I don't mean everybody
else. Now, here's the interesting thing is that, and I don't know why Jimmy didn't make this distinction more pointedly. I don't think Jimmy would say that that there are people who are obligated to shill for the left as much as there are people that in their context would be obligated to shill for the Democrats. But for Rogan, these are interchangeable ideas.
Doing it, but everybody else seems to be. I don't mean everybody else. If you're one of the people that are not, like, fuck you, Joe Rogan.
There's just a handful of people who are not.
There's so few that are calling out people in the Democratic Party for what really is going on. Like, I was infuriated when people that I knew that I was friends with were trying to tell me that Hillary Clinton was a good choice. And that's the same choice.
Pause it. Now, of course, he's talking about in the race with Donald Trump, and I would still contend, and I think there's even mounting evidence now, that Hillary Clinton was the better choice between those two.
And not a good choice in general, like in the grand scheme of things. There's no contradiction between those two things.
None whatsoever. We have a system where if anybody, I would have taken any dollar amount ever from anybody who wanted to bet that either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton would not win.
Yep.
I would have bet every single thing I own and things I don't own. And nobody would take a bet otherwise who was sane. But roll it back and let's just hear. So now... I don't expect Jimmy Dore to take a different position because his position throughout the thing was that, lesser of evilism is, I don't know what, but more or less, I'm sure they're going to agree here, but go ahead.
That Hillary Clinton was a good choice. And that's the same choice. I'm like, look, I don't know if she's murdered people, but I know that I worry that she's murdered people. That's a real, I really wonder. Like this Seth Rich shit.
I know, first of all, you don't even need to go there.
Pause it for 1 second. That's interesting. You don't even have to go there. I'm trying to think of somebody who went there. Can we just pull up that image for a second? What's that one? Who is this here? Did DNC staffer Seth Rich murdered tied to WikiLeaks? Guess who went there? That's odd. There's Jimmy Dore sitting there next to a picture of Seth Rich. There you go. Oh, but he got 116,000 views out of that one. That's good. All right, let's go back to the interview with Joe Rogan here because Jimmy Dore, of course, doesn't respond to the Seth Rich thing. Instead of saying, hey, actually, no. The issue with Hillary Clinton had to do with her politics, not the fact that you think she might have killed somebody because you've been listening to Rush Limbaugh for 30 years telling you that Vince Foster was secretly murdered. Like, there's no room for sanity in this conversation now.
Or what have you
because
it?
Jimmy has already forfeited that.
Right.
And that's the problem. The value of Jimmy going on to this show is already undercut because he can't respond to the idea that Joe Rogan doesn't want to vote for Hillary Clinton because he thinks she may have murdered somebody. But continue. And I would add, I would add that Seth Rich was killed after the election. So I don't know who he thought that she had killed before then. I guess he must be Vince Foster. And this would be a great time to say, you know, this is one of the problems in our politics, Joe. And that is that, like, because Rush Limbaugh was on there and there was an entire conspiracy thing arguing that Vince Foster had been murdered and dragged his body to the park.
What if you enlarged it? And what if you said, you know, every single president of the United States is at the very least complicit in murder just via the design of our foreign policy, Joe?
Yeah, like, you know, there's a million ways you could do that. But Jimmy can't do that because when Joe Rogan brings up Seth Rich, look, it takes a while for Jimmy to figure out how to answer this because Jimmy went in on this. Now, maybe Joe Rogan said, like, I couldn't vote for somebody in good conscience who was so clearly had Parkinson's. And Joe would have the same problem. I mean, excuse me, Jimmy would have the same problem because he did multiple videos on that. But go ahead.
And that's the same choice. I'm like, look, I don't know if she's murdered people, but I know that I worry that she's murdered people. That's a real, I really wonder. Like, this Seth Rich shit.
I know, first of all, you don't even need to go there. You know?
There's so many other things.
There's so many other things that we know for a fact.
The Clinton Foundation, for instance.
So, the Iraq War.
What do we know about the Clinton Foundation, for sure? Bill Clinton right now, like, look, I don't know anything for sure about the Clinton Foundation. I know that Bill Clinton, in a pretty crafty move, spent the past couple of days in the Virgin Islands in Puerto Rico delivering all sorts of medical shit, which is clearly a way to set up Chelsea Clinton's run in 30 years. Could be. We get 30 years of charity work so that she can have a run. But it's all just to cover up the Vince Foster thing.
The Clinton thing was another thing that muddied the waters, though. I just say, like, of course, they took tons of money from people that wanted to have a good relationship with them, including foreign governments and corporations, because that's who they are. And that's a big problem in and of itself. But this flipped conspiratorial thing is
right,
different.
But, I mean, compare that to Donald Trump, who also undoubtedly took money from people. Like, that's...
No, those
are the people who run for president.
I run a clean ship.
Those are the people who run for president. And then here's the thing. Jimmy goes on to make a lot of different points that I more or less agree with.
Yeah, he's on the ball with the Iraq stuff, I think.
Sure. Although, you know, John Kerry also voted for the Iraq War. And it would have been better to have him than George W. Bush.
No kidding.
And Donald Trump was supportive. Now, he wasn't a senator, but Barack Obama was also against the Iraq War. I mean, he goes on to talk about how Donald Trump, people got really hoodwinked by Donald Trump because they thought he was going to be non-interventionist. Can you imagine that? You imagine that the guy who started Trump University was able to hoodwink people.
I think there were also some people in the media zone who did correctly anticipate that Donald Trump's anti-intervention thing wasn't exactly something to bank.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I also thought
a couple of clairvoyants might have been able to see through that veneer.
Sam and I were real
criminologists.
We were real Miss Cleo on that shit because we also thought when he directly called for war crimes in his campaign rallies that might have been also a tell.
Right, yeah. The pro-torture, the overt pro-torture calls may have been an indication.
The pig's blood thing?
Yeah.
Pig's blood thing?
Maybe.
Bomb the shit out of them, steal their oil.
Could have gone either way.
A little bit of a heads up.
Go after their families.
But here's the real problem, is that because Jimmy could not push back on stuff like Seth Rich and whatnot, the value of his going on that show is diminished. Exhibit A... Here is the Donald Trump Reddit board. For real, this Joe Rogan video, everyone's talking about exposing the DNC's obvious involvement in the murder of Seth Rich, is 100% worth the watch and should be spread far and wide.
It's obvious.
You know why it's so obvious? Is because the so-called leftist there, who Joe is bringing on to show his bona fides in taking other people's opinions, does not even slightly push back on that. Because he can't.
That's some Alex Jones shit.
It is indeed. It is indeed. But that's an example of the point that I was always trying to make with Jimmy. And fortunately, Jimmy and Joe did it for me. And I just didn't want to let that pass.
I'm starting to get mad now, too. I'll admit, I initially found your feud with him somewhat boring.
Well, by the time you got here, it was really Michael's feud with him.
Okay. Yeah, it's Michael's going to be over it in like 3 months, and then it's going to be Jamie on it.
Right.
Like, I'm starting to get mad. Sam.
Actually, and you, low-key, have been a constant instigator.
I just keep it on a simmer.
Yeah, Lek has a simmer on it. No,
I mean, I've been off it for months. But it's like I abandoned the child.
I think it's
and
a
then
shame.
Michael like couldn't help it, but like
well,
went out,
I was
bought
well,
it, like,
no, because I
brand
I
new
was,
coat and
I was
scarf
waiting.
And earmuffs and said, "Come have some hot coke."
Yeah, come have some. No, I was hoping after the election that he would redeem himself and it, and
I
do
don't
the
think
yeah.
So.
There you go.
I mean, initially...
No, actually, you did think so briefly. You thought that several months into the
not
Trump...
Not him.
Yeah, not him personally. You never thought for a second. Yeah, because he found his niche. And it's a shame because he speaks very effectively to anger and a general disgust. And that you can't take away from him. And it's a fucking shame.
Well, I initially thought when you were talking about him and Jill Stein that he was sort of like this very principled leftist anarchist type who like... You know, goes to Food Not Bombs and really has a systemic critique of neoliberalism.
Fuck Food Not Bombs. I didn't hear one
liberals
fucking Food
and Republicans,
Not Bombs
but like,
do a fucking YouTube video.
But like, you're a bad leftist if you care that much about national electoral politics over literally anything else that he could be talking about. So that kind of put the lie to it for me.
I mean, what put it to me, the last thing I'll say is this Kamala Harris video where it was like, look, I think Kamala Harris is totally a wolf in sheep's clothing. I'm not a fan of hers. But like, if your interpretation is the tectonic plates have moved so much that this corporatist is saying that for a single payer, and instead of saying you got to watch her and demand specifics. Yeah, that's a smart video. Not a, do you see the tonality of the register of her voice? She's not enthusiastic. I mean, come on, man. Get the fuck out
this
of here.
This is relevant to the Gillibrand clip we'll play later.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I call bullshit, Jimmy Dore.
Oh, now you've done it. Now.
Because you know what? I voted for Jill Stein, too. I'm not, like, proud of it. There were no good choices. I voted in New York. I would have voted for Hillary in a swing state, even though I hate everything she stands for.
Because you vote out of fear.
And fine.
Be afraid.
Trump is terrible. The Republicans are terrible. You should be afraid of that. Sorry. And I go to every DSA meeting. I think that it's much more important, as I've said, to work on the underlying social forces and building class power. But also it helps not to have the worst of two evils running the show.
Clinton shill.
Clinton shill. Right.
If that makes me a Clinton shill, then
coward neoliberal.
Just tell it to Joy Reid. Just tell it that
so just run more interference for Neera Tanden and people wonder why they don't fucking trust you.
Like, it doesn't seem like something we should be spending
should
that much time
it. We should
on.
Doctor
like,
a picture of Jamie and Neera Tanden just hanging out. Drinking beer.
Do it. I dare you.
I would love to see. To do that. All right, we got to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Just a heads up on over the next week or so, we're going to be going on vacation next week and perhaps even on this Friday as we will be short-staffed. But we have some great interviews for you next week. Daniel Ellsberg, Avi Chomsky. We have some on polarization, on fascism, on a whole raft of, on the how do democracies die? Always good to know. All that and more. So you will be in good hands over the next week. Well, you'll be in our hands. It's just that they'll be pre-recorded. Pre-recorded hands. Folks, it's your support that makes this show possible. By becoming a member of the Majority Report, you get to be a member of the Majority Report. But more importantly, you support the Daily Show. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you an hour plus of extra content every day. I think members over the break, they're going to hear. Did we find the original Daniel Ellsberg?
Not yet, but I'll look again now.
Okay.
I don't know if it's on that.
But we'll pull a deep vault interviews, and it'll be great. You'll love it. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY and get 10% off. Don't forget to check out last night's TMBS. ContraPoints was on, right?
Yes.
You can check it out on YouTube or check it out on YouTube and subscribe to iTunes. So that way you do everybody you're helping support and widen the audience for Michael's show.
We also did Wolfenstein to celebrate our first 1,000
patrons. That's still up
patrons.
On the stream, so people
that's
want to check
pretty,
that out.
It was pretty funny.
How long did you play for?
For about an hour.
40 minutes.
Wow.
40 minutes, yeah.
40 minutes.
And where is the game? Is it here?
No, I took it home.
We'll do it. We'll get to when we get to 2,000. There'll be another one. But we did a brief bit where we, and the next time we do it when we get to 2,000 patrons, the request is that Matt play the game and I do a voiceover of you as the protagonist of the game. So that was something people enjoyed.
Well, why don't I just do the voiceover?
Oh no! The voice.
No, I see.
Yeah. No, so it will entertain people, Sam.
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah, not like I wish I was reading a Social Security report, not fighting futuristic Nazis.
Actually, hello. I was going to say I really do wish I was fighting futuristic Nazis. And,
yeah,
Michael developed a taste.
We may do that.
I did develop a taste for it.
We may do that, Wolfenstein. Just when on some other arbitrary
Wolfenstein Wednesdays.
Wolfenstein Wednesdays. I like it. I'm really into shooting kneecaps definitely. And feet. I enjoyed that.
All right, folks. And don't forget Jamie's Patreon at patreon.com/JamiePeck. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
C'est une poupée qui fait non. C'est une poupée qui fait non toute la journée.